girls. My appearances in the office the last month or so have been sporadic, to say the least. All I seem to want to do now is work out, lifting weights, mostly, and secure reservations at new restaurants I've already been to, then cancel them. My apartment reeks of rotten fruit, though actually the smell is caused by what I scooped out of Christie's head and poured into a Marco glass bowl that sits on a counter near the entranceway. The head itself lies covered with brain pulp, hollow and eyeless, in the corner of the living room, beneath the piano, and I plan to use it as a jack-o'-lantern on Halloween. Because of the stench, I decide to use Paul Owen's apartment for a little tryst I have planned for tonight. I've had the premises scanned for surveillance devices. Disappointingly, there were none. Someone I talked to through my lawyer tells me that Donald Kimball, the private investigator, has heard that Owen really is in London, that someone spotted him twice in the lobby of Claridge's, once each at a tailor on Savile Row and at a trendy new restaurant in Chelsea. Kimball flew over two nights ago, which means no one is keeping watch over the apartment anymore, and the keys I stole from Owen still function. So I was able to bring the tools, a power drill, a bottle of acid, the nail gun, knives, a Bic lighter, over there after lunch. I hire two escort girls from a reputable, if somewhat sleazy, private establishment I've never used before, charging them on Owen's gold American Express card, which, I suppose because everyone thinks Owen is now in London, no one has put a trace on, though there is one on his platinum Amex. The Patty Winter show today was, ironically, I thought, about Princess Di's beauty tips. Midnight. The conversation I have with the two girls, both very young, blonde hard bodies with big tits, is brief, since I'm having a difficult time containing my disordered self.
"You live in a palace, mister,"
one of the girls, Tori, says in a baby's voice, awed by Owen's ridiculous-looking condo.
"It's a real palace."
Annoyed, I shoot her a glance. It's not that nice. While making drinks from Owen's well-stocked bar, I mention to both of them that I work on Wall Street, at Pierce & Pierce. Neither seems particularly interested. Again, I find myself hearing a voice, one of theirs, asking if that's a shoe store. Tiffany flips through an issue of GQ that's 3 months old, sitting on the black leather couch beneath the strip of faux cowhide paneling, and she's looking confused, like she doesn't understand something, anything. I'm thinking, pray, you bitch, just pray. And then I have to admit to myself what a turn on it is encouraging these girls to debase themselves in front of me for what amounts to pocket change. I also mention, after pouring them another drink, that I went to Harvard. And then I ask, after a pause, ever hear of it? I'm shocked when Tori answers,
I had a business acquaintance who said he went there.
She shrugs dumbly. A client? I ask, interested.
Well,
she starts nervously.
Let's just say a business acquaintance.
Was this a pimp? I ask. Then the weird part happens.
Well,
she stalls again before continuing.
Let's just call him a business acquaintance.
She sips from her glass.
He said he went to Harvard, but I didn't believe him.
She looks over at Tiffany, then back at me. Our mutual silence encourages her to keep talking, and she continues haltingly.
He had, like, this monkey, and I would have to watch this monkey in his apartment?
She stops, starts, continues in monotone, occasionally gulping.
I'd want to watch TV all day, because there was nothing else to do while the guy was out, and while I tried to keep an eye on the monkey. But there was something wrong with this monkey.
She stops and takes a deep breath.
The monkey would only watch...
Again she stops, takes in the room, a quizzical expression creasing her face, as if she's not sure she should be telling us this story. If we, me and the other bitch, should be privy to this information. And I brace myself for something shocking, something revelatory, a connection.
It would only watch...
She sighs, then in a sudden rush admits,
the Oprah Winfrey Show, and that's all it would watch. The guy had tapes and tapes of it, and he made all of them for this monkey.
Now she looks over at me imploringly, as if she's losing her mind here, right now, in Owen's apartment, and wants me to, what, verify it?
With the commercials edited out, one time I tried to turn the channel, turn one of the tapes off, if I wanted to watch a soap instead or something, but...
She finishes her drink and, rolling her eyes, obviously upset by this story, continues bravely.
The monkey would screech at me, and it would only calm down when Oprah was on.
She swallows, clears her throat, looks like she's going to cry, but doesn't.
And, you know, you try to turn the channel, and the damn monkey would try to scratch you.
She concludes bitterly, and hugs herself, shivering, uselessly trying to warm herself. Silence. Arctic, frigid, utter silence. The light burning over us in the apartment is cold and electric. Standing there, I look at Tori, then at the other girl, Tiffany, who looks queasy. I finally say something, stumbling over my own words. I don't care whether you've led a decent life or not. Sex happens, a hardcore montage. After I shave Tori's pussy, she lies on her back on Paul's futon and spreads her legs while I finger her and suck it off, sometimes licking her asshole. When Tiffany sucks my cock, her tongue is hot and wet, and she keeps flicking it over the head, irritating me, while I call her a nasty whore, a bitch. Fucking one of them with a condom while the other sucks my balls, lapping at them, I stare at the Angelus silkscreen print hanging over the bed, and I'm thinking about pools of blood, geysers of the stuff. Sometimes it's very quiet in the room except for the wet sounds my cock makes slipping in and out of one of the girls' vaginas. Tiffany and I take turns eating Tori's hairless cunt and asshole. The two of them come, yelling simultaneously in a 69 position. Once their cunts are wet enough, I bring out a dildo and let the two of them play with it. Tori spreads her legs and fingers her own clit, while Tiffany fucks her with the huge greased dildo, Tori urging Tiffany to fuck her cunt harder with it, until finally, gasping, she comes. Again, I make the two of them eat each other out, but it starts failing to turn me on. All I can think about is blood and what their blood will look like, and though Tori knows what to do, how to eat pussy, it doesn't subdue me, and I push her away from Tiffany's cunt and start licking and biting at the pink, soft, wet cuntness, while Tori spreads her ass and sits on Tiffany's face while fingering her own clit. Tiffany hungrily tongues her pussy, wet and glistening, and Tori reaches down and squeezes Tiffany's big, firm tits. I'm biting hard, gnawing at Tiffany's cunt, and she starts tensing up. "Relax," I say soothingly. She starts squealing, trying to pull away, and finally she screams as my teeth rip into her flesh. Tori thinks Tiffany is coming, and grinds her own cunt harder onto Tiffany's mouth, smothering her screams. But when I look up at Tori, blood covering my face, meat and pubic hair hanging from my mouth, blood pumping from Tiffany's torn cunt onto the comforter, I can feel her sudden rush of horror. I use mace to blind both of them momentarily, and then I knock them unconscious with the butt of the nail gun. Tori awakens to find herself tied up, bent over the side of the bed, on her back, her face covered with blood because I've cut her lips off with a pair of nail scissors. Tiffany is tied up with 6 pairs of Paul's suspenders on the other side of the bed, moaning with fear, totally immobilized by the monster of reality. I want her to watch what I'm going to do to Tori, and she's propped up in a way that makes this unavoidable. As usual, in an attempt to understand these girls, I'm filming their deaths. With Tori and Tiffany, I use a Minox LX Ultra miniature camera that takes 9.5mm film, has a 15mm f3.5 lens, an exposure meter and a built-in neutral density filter, and sits on a tripod. I put a CD of the Traveling Wilburys into a portable CD player that sits on the headboard above the bed to mute any screams. I start by skinning Tori a little, making incisions with a steak knife and ripping bits of flesh from her legs and stomach while she screams in vain, begging for mercy in a high, thin voice. And I'm hoping that she realizes her punishment will end up being relatively light compared to what I planned for the other one. I keep spraying Tori with mace, and then I try to cut off her fingers with nail scissors, and finally I pour acid onto her belly and genitals. But none of this comes close to killing her. So I resort to stabbing her in the throat, and eventually the blade of the knife breaks off in what's left of her neck, stuck on bone, and I stop. While Tiffany watches, finally I saw the entire head off, torrents of blood splash against the walls, even the ceiling, and hold the head up like a prize. I take my cock, purple with stiffness, and lowering Tori's head to my lap, I push it into her bloodied mouth and start fucking it until I come, exploding into it. Afterwards, I'm so hard, I can even walk around the blood-soaked room carrying the head, which feels warm and weightless on my dick. This is amusing for a while, but I need to rest, so I remove the head, placing it in Paul's oak and teak armoire. And then I'm sitting in a chair, naked, covered with blood, watching HBO on Owen's TV, drinking a Corona, complaining out loud, wondering why Owen doesn't have Cinemax. Later, now, I'm telling Tiffany, I'll let you go, shh. And I'm stroking her face, which is slick, owing to tears and mace, gently, and it burns me that she actually looks up hopefully for a moment before she sees the lit match I'm holding in my hand that I've torn from a matchbook I picked up in the bar at Palio's where I was having drinks with Robert Farrell and Robert Prechter last Friday. And I lower it to her eyes, which she instinctively closes, singeing both eyelashes and brows. Then I finally use a Bic lighter and hold it up to both sockets, making sure they stay open with my fingers, burning my thumb and pinky in the process, until the eyeballs burst. While she's still conscious, I roll her over, and spreading her ass cheeks, I nail a dildo that I've tied to a board deep into her rectum, using the nail gun. Then, turning her over again, her body weak with fear, I cut all the flesh off around her mouth, and using the power drill with a detachable massive head, I widen that hole while she shakes, protesting. And once I'm satisfied with the size of the hole I've created, her mouth open as wide as possible, a reddish-black tunnel of twisted tongue and loosened teeth, I force my hand down deep into her throat until it disappears up to my wrist. All the while, her head shakes uncontrollably. But she can't bite down since the power drill ripped her teeth out of her gums, and grab at the veins lodged there like tubes, and I loosen them with my fingers, and when I've gotten a good grip on them, violently yank them out through her open mouth, pulling until the neck caves in, disappears, the skin tightens and splits, though there's little blood. Most of the neck's innards, including the jugular, hang out of her mouth, and her whole body starts twitching like a roach on its back, shaking spasmodically, her melted eyes running down her face, mixing with the tears and mace. And then quickly, not wanting to waste time, I turn off the lights, and in the dark before she dies, I rip open her stomach with my bare hands. I can't tell what I'm doing with them, but it's making wet snapping sounds, and my hands are hot and covered with something. The aftermath. No fear. No confusion. Unable to linger since there are things to be done today. Return videotapes, work out at the gym, a new British musical on Broadway I promised Jeanette I'd take her to, a dinner reservation to be made somewhere. What's left of both bodies is an early rigor mortis. Part of Tiffany's body, I think it's her even though I'm having a hard time telling the two apart, has sunken in and her ribs jut out, most broken in half from what's left of her stomach, both breasts having been pierced by them. A head has been nailed to the wall. Fingers lie scattered or arranged in some kind of circle around the CD player. One of the bodies, the one on the floor, has been defecated on, and seems to be covered with teeth marks where I had bitten into it, savagely. With the blood from one of the corpse's stomachs that I dip my hand into, I scrawl in dripping red letters above the faux cowhide paneling in the living room. The words, I am back. And below it a scary drawing, which looks like this.